So welcome everyone to another deep dive. Today we are on a mission to decode a really fascinating framework about investment and business strategy. And it was sparked entirely by one remarkably blunt quote from the greatest capital allocator in history.
Yeah, it's a great topic.
Right. So imagine this. We're in Omaha. The date is May 2026. It is the 60th anniversary of Berkshire Hathaway.
A massive milestone.
Huge. And Warren Buffett is 95 years old, sitting on the floor of this massive arena with the directors. I mean, he's surrounded by 40,000 shareholders.
Right. The whole crowd is there.
Exactly. He grabs the microphone, starts talking about his massive investment in Apple, and says something almost audacious. Quote, $35 billion became $185 billion. We did not do a damn thing. That's the way we like it.
It really is a stunning moment of transparency, honestly. I mean, we did not do a damn thing.
Yeah.
If you pull the thread on that single quote, it unravels this entirely hidden hierarchy of how businesses actually grow.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, who has to do the heavy lifting to generate that wealth?
Wait, doing nothing? I mean, that sounds fantastic for a headline, sure.
Of course.
But practically speaking, how does a company generate $150 billion without its primary investor making a single strategic move? Especially when you consider the striking visual contrast going on in that very room.
Oh, the optics of it are incredible.
Yeah, because Tim Cook is sitting right there. Cook, who had just announced his departure as CEO of Apple at age 65, effective that September.
The contrast is exactly the point, because Cook spent 15 years running Apple.
Right. For 15 years, he made thousands, maybe tens of thousands of grueling, high-stakes decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
He managed incredibly complex global supply chains, navigated geopolitical tensions, launched massive new product categories. I mean, he aged in that role.
Yeah, he worked, he optimized, he bled for every inch of progress, and Buffett. For those exact same 15 years, he made exactly one decision. He bought the stock.
Wow.
After that, he just sat back and held the paper while Cook did all the sweating.
Okay, let's unpack this. How is it physically possible to make $150 billion by doing absolutely nothing? And why does this single, remarkably blunt, quote, reveal a fundamental framework about the nature of investing?
Well, to understand why Buffett didn't have to sweat for that $150 billion, we first have to fundamentally rethink how we look at a company.
Okay.
We have to look at the very DNA of a stock. According to the framework in our sources, every single stock in existence is made up of two distinct components, the A and the B.
The A and the B. I mean, I need you to break that down. Are we talking about different classes of shares here, like class A and class B?
No, no, not at all. We are talking about the underlying economic engines of the business itself.
Got it.
So the A is the toll. It's the current earnings power. It is what the business produces today, right now, based on its existing assets, its current products, and its established market position.
Makes sense.
And the B is the growth. It's the compounding. It's what the business promises to produce tomorrow.
Okay, I was actually thinking about this while reading through the material, and the best way I can picture it is by comparing it to a physical highway system.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Yeah, think of the A as the toll booth. It is sitting there right now, collecting money from the cars that are currently driving on the road today. That's your current earnings.
Perfect.
And the B, on the other hand, is the construction crew out there pouring concrete for new lanes, promising that more traffic will be able to flow through tomorrow.
That is a perfect way to visualize it, because every company has some version of a toll booth and some version of new lanes being built.
Right.
Even a dying legacy value stock, let's say an old declining retail chain, still has an A. It's still collecting some kind of toll today from its remaining stores.
Even if no one's building new lanes.
Exactly. Even if it has no B, no construction crew building future growth.
And on the flip side, a cash-burning tech startup that makes zero money today essentially has no A. There's no working toll booth yet.
None at all.
But it has a massive B. The promise of future lanes, future compounding.
Precisely. But here is the massive realization the framework pivots on. The defining question for you as an investor is never whether a stock has an A or a B.
What is it then?
The true question, the one that separates the staggering multi-generational wealth builders from everyone else, is what is the quality of that A and B? And crucially, what does it cost to maintain them?
Because, I mean, not all toll booths are created equal, and not all construction projects are funded the same way.
Exactly. Let's look at the cost of the A, that toll booth, first. Our sources contrast to absolutely massive, universally known companies. Coca-Cola, and Visa.
Okay.
Both of these companies have incredibly powerful AAs. They collect massive global tolls. But look at the difference in what it costs them to keep those toll booths running.
Yeah, let's carry that highway metaphor through. Coke's brand is iconic. It's global.
Like,
but to keep that toll booth operational, to maintain that habit in the consumer's mind, they can't just sit back.
No, they really can't.
They have to pay an army of guards and repair crews. Specifically, $4 to $5 billion every single year on marketing, just to stop Pepsi from stealing the traffic.
That's the reality of their business model.
Yeah.
If Coke stops spending that $4 or $5 billion to defend their toll, Pepsi takes market share immediately.
Yeah, overnight.
The toll exists, it's massive, but it demands constant, expensive defense. Now, compare that toll booth to Visa's.
Right. Visa also has a powerful A. The duopoly they have with MasterCard is locked in globally. Every single time you swipe your card or tap your phone, they collect their toll.
And everyone uses them.
Right. But the difference is what they spend to maintain it. Coke spends billions. What does Visa spend?
Practically zero heavy lifting. Their infrastructure is entirely digital, ubiquitous, and deeply embedded in the global financial system.
Wow.
The toll defends itself. In fact, because of the network effect, the more people use the Visa network, the stronger the toll booth becomes.
It's like a toll booth that automatically upgrades itself every time a car drives through. You have two incredibly powerful A's, but two radically different cost structures. One drains billions of dollars of capital every year. The other is virtually frictionless.
And that exact same logic applies to the B, the growth, those new lanes on your highway. Let's compare a massive physical company like DNSF, the huge North American freight railroad network, to Visa.
Okay.
Both have very real growth. DNSF definitely has a B. As the American economy expands, the population grows, more goods are bought and sold, and freight volumes naturally increase. The railroad grows.
But the cost of building those new lanes for BNSF is astronomical. We are talking about the physical reality of entropy here.
Very true.
To handle more freight, they have to physically lay new steel rails. They have to buy massive new diesel locomotives. They have to constantly battle the elements to maintain the tracks, constantly optimize for physical efficiency.
Right. The growth is very real. But the cost of achieving that growth, the capital expenditures or CapEx, is painfully real too. They have to pour billions of actual dollars into the dirt just to realize their B.
Now bring it back to Visa. Visa's B, their growth engine, is the ongoing global digitization of money.
Yes.
Our sources note that a massive percentage of the world is still transacting in physical cash. As those economies transition to digital payments, Visa's network naturally expands.
And here's the kicker. Visa spends exactly $0 to make the world digitize. They don't have to lay the fiber optic cables for the internet.
Oh, right.
They don't have to buy the smartphones or the payment terminals that people use to transact. The global macroeconomic wave of digitization just picks Visa up and carries them forward.
They aren't building the new lanes. The world is building the lanes for them.
What's fascinating here is how this cost dynamic fundamentally alters the underlying math of compounding wealth.
How so?
Over time, an expensive A drains resources just to maintain the status quo. And an expensive B demands heavy capital expenditure to grow. That constant cash drain narrows the profit margins. When margins narrow, it slows down the speed at which money can compound.
But if you have a free A and a free B, those margins hold steady at incredibly high levels.
Exactly.
The return on invested capital stays sky high. And compounding doesn't just continue, it actually accelerates because you aren't bleeding cash just to move forward.
Which brings us to the core revelation in the sources. Because these costs vary so wildly from company to company, there is actually a distinct three-tiered hierarchy of free growth.
A hierarchy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And this hierarchy dictates exactly who has to sweat, bleed, and work for the money.
Okay. Lay out the hierarchy for us. Where do we start?
We start at the bottom tier, level three, the mechanical.
A mechanical.
Yeah. In a level three business, everyone is chained to the machine. The company has to work incredibly hard, the investor depends entirely on the company working hard, and both the A and the B are extremely expensive.
Oh, I know a good example of this from the sources. They bring up Geico as a prime example of a level three business. And yes, make sure you're pronouncing that Geico with a hard G.
Right, Geico with a hard G.
Think about car insurance. It is a completely commoditized product. The only way to maintain your A, your massive market share, is relentless marketing. That little gecko isn't cheap. If they stop advertising, people just switch to Progressive or State Farm.
Exactly.
And to achieve their B, their growth and profitability, it requires absolute punishing discipline in underwriting. They have to accurately price risk on millions of drivers.
And if they slick up on that underwriting discipline even for a quarter, they lose billions. Or take BNSF, the railroad we just discussed.
Right.
Constant maintenance, endless capital expenditure, fighting physical entropy every single day. The managers have to work exhausting hours, and the investor has to constantly monitor if the managers are making the right heavy capital decisions.
So no one is free?
No one is free. The machine demands constant feeding.
So that's level three. Everyone sweats. What's level two?
Level two is defined as mechanical for the company, but free for the investor. This brings us right back to that opening scene in Omaha with Tim Cook and Warren Buffett.
Okay. So Apple is a level two business.
Precisely. Tim Cook is chained to the machine. He has to make thousands of exhausting decisions. Apple spends tens of billions on research and development to invent the next iPhone, billions securing complex supply chains across the globe.
So the company is working furiously.
Right. The A and the B are very expensive for Apple to maintain and achieve.
But for the investor, for Buffett, he is entirely free. He doesn't have to approve the R&D budgets or negotiate with chip suppliers. He just sits back and watches.
Exactly.
The growth is heavily mechanical for the company, but completely free for the shareholder.
Which is a fantastic place to be. But the sources introduce the absolute pinnacle of this hierarchy. Level one, the free surfer.
The free surfer.
In level one business, the B, the growth, is free for the company and is free for the investor. Absolutely no one works.
I'm struggling a bit with this concept, to be honest. I get Visa riding the wave of digitization, but the sources also mention MSCI and Moody's as level one free surfers.
Yeah, they do.
How does a company like MSCI act as a frictionless toll booth? What is the wave they are riding?
It's a great question, and it's essential to understand the mechanics here. MSCI creates financial indices like the MSCI World Index. They don't manage money themselves.
Wait, really?
Nope. They just maintain the mathematical list of stocks that make up the index.
Okay, so they just publish a list. How is that a multi-billion dollar business?
Because of the massive global macroeconomic shift over the last 20 years from active mutual funds to passive index funds and ETFs, trillions of dollars are moving into passive funds.
Ah, okay.
When an asset manager creates an ETF that tracks an MSCI index, they have to pay MSCI a tiny basis point fee, a fraction of a percent, on all the assets in that fund.
Oh, wow. So as more and more investors globally just blindly pour their retirement money into passive index funds,
MSCI's revenue explodes. I don't have to convince you to invest. They don't have to build new physical infrastructure. The structural wave of passive investing does all the heavy lifting.
That's incredible.
They literally just calculate the index and collect a toll on trillions of dollars. The toll collects itself and the wave pushes them forward. The company doesn't spend heavy capital to grow and the investor doesn't have to make any decisions.
You just get on the surfboard and the wave does the rest.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting though, because when you lay out this three-tier hierarchy, level three mechanical, level two free for investor, level one free surfer, a glaring paradox emerges about Warren Buffett himself.
Oh, yeah. It's what we might call the Buffett paradox.
If free surfers are the ultimate business model, why did Buffett build a kingdom of level three mechanical beasts? I mean, he literally sat on that floor in Omaha and praised the level two dynamic of doing nothing.
He did.
He clearly understands the power of a level one free surfer, too. He owned Moody's, which is a textbook level one, but he kept it to only 3% of his portfolio.
Right.
When you look at the empire Buffett actually built over 60 years at Berkshire Hathaway, it is overwhelmingly level three, BNSF, the railroad, GEICO, the insurance giant, Berkshire Energy.
That's what heavy lifting.
Why? If level one and level two are the dream, why deliberately choose to buy heavy, sweat-inducing level threes?
It is a profound contradiction. How does the greatest capital allocator end up running the heaviest machine? The sources synthesize four very specific reasons for why Buffett took this path.
Let's hear them.
The first is simply scale.
Scale.
Yes. Today, Berkshire Hathaway has hundreds of billions of dollars in cash that they need to deploy to generate a return. You simply cannot put $100 billion into a pure free surfer like MSCI.
Because it's too big of a check.
Right. The company isn't big enough to absorb that much capital. Mm. If Buffett tried, he would basically have to buy the whole company, driving the stock price to absurd levels and ruining the very economics that made it attractive.
So the wave is great, but Buffett's surfboard is just way too big to ride it.
Exactly. The second reason is the era he operated in. Remember, Buffett took control of Berkshire Hathaway in 1965.
A long time ago.
Back then, The great free surfers of our modern intangible economy, Visa, MasterCard, S&P Global, MSCI, they simply didn't exist as public companies you could buy shares in.
He had to build his empire with the materials that were actually available in the 20th century, which were mostly tangible, heavy, mechanical businesses.
Right. And that historical reality leads directly to the third reason, temperament. Buffett actually loves operations. He loves talking to managers. He has an incredible affinity for tangible, physical assets. He deeply understands trains carrying freight across the American landscape.
That makes sense.
He understands the complex math of insurance premiums. The invisible, frictionless, totally intangible toll roads of the digital age just don't naturally align with his fundamental, deep-seated temperament as an investor.
So we have scale, era, and temperament. What's the fourth reason?
Float. The core engine that powered Berkshire Hathaway's phenomenal rise is insurance float, that massive pool of premium money they collect from GEICO and other insurance units before they have to pay out claims.
Right. He takes that free money and invests it.
Yes. But to deploy that massive, constantly growing amount of capital effectively, the Berkshire model basically requires them to buy entire businesses outright.
Not just shares.
Right. Not just shares. The whole company. And if you were in the market to buy entire companies, almost all of them are going to be mechanical. They're going to have expensive A's and expensive B's.
Because the good ones don't sell.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Pure free surfers are so structurally profitable that they rarely, if ever, sell themselves entirely.
So the conclusion of this paradox is that Buffett managed to liberate himself through incredible delegation. He hired the best managers in the world to sweat over the trains and the insurance pricing.
Right.
But he didn't liberate the system itself. The Berkshire system is still highly, intensely mechanical. It requires constant work.
And this difference between a heavy mechanical empire like Berkshire and a frictionless free surfer like Visa creates a massive pricing illusion in the stock market today.
Oh, this is the valuation illusion.
Right.
Let's really get into the numbers here, because this is where the theoretical framework actually hits your wallet.
Yeah, let's do it.
If you're looking at your own brokerage account right now, traditional Wall Street advice usually tells you to buy the cheaper stock.
So let's look at the classic metric, the price-to-earnings ratio, or P-E ratio.
Right. For anyone who needs a quick refresher, the P/E ratio is simply how much the market is asking you to pay for $1 of a company's current profit. A higher P/E means the stock is more expensive.
Yep.
Currently, Berkshire Hathaway trades at a P/E ratio of 15. Visa trades at a P/E of 29.
So the conventional wisdom looks at those numbers and says, well, this is obvious. Berkshire is a bargain at 15, and Visa is really expensive at 29. I should buy Berkshire.
But the sources argue that instinct is completely wrong. What if the metric itself is broken when comparing these two completely different types of businesses?
This raises an important question. What is the market actually pricing into those numbers? Traditional valuation is built for mechanical companies. Our sources argue that a P/E of 15 is completely correct for Berkshire. It is not a discount. It is accurately pricing in the immense complexity of managing all those level three businesses.
It's pricing in the fact that BNSF has to spend billions on steel rails.
Exactly. It's pricing in the heavy capital expenditures needed for the railroad and the energy grid. It is pricing in the mechanical cost of fighting entropy.
Right.
And crucially, it's pricing in the succession risk. Warren Buffett is a once-in-a-century genius. As Greg Abel takes over, the market demands a discount because the genius who ran the machine is leaving.
So P/E 15 is a totally fair price for a heavy, complex, expensive machine.
Yes. But then you look at Visa at a P/E of 29. Traditional analysts call it expensive. But the framework suggests Visa at 29 is actually a structural gift hiding in plain sight.
Why? Because traditional metrics literally don't know how to value a company with no friction.
Exactly. Wall Street models struggle to price in the complete absence of heavy lifting. Visa has almost zero mechanical cost. There is no heavy capex needed to grow into new emerging markets. And there is zero succession risk.
Right. Think about it. If the CEO of Visa decides to retire tomorrow, or frankly, if they hire a totally mediocre replacement, the global macro wave of digitization does not stop.
Not at all.
People don't suddenly go back to using paper cash just because Visa has a new executive team.
The toll booth keeps collecting, the network effect keeps compounding, and the wave keeps pushing them forward. Visa isn't expensive at 29. It's structurally undervalued because the market's mechanical tools can't quite grasp the sheer power of a freebie.
And when we talk about the power of freebie and the absence of friction, we really have to talk about the human element outlined in the text, because there is a very real, very heavy human toll to those mechanical level three businesses.
There is.
Going back to that room in Omaha, Tim Cook gave 15 years of his life, his creative energy, his daily stress to maintain Apple's A and produce its B.
The mechanical machine demands human sacrifice to run.
It does. And look at the CEO of BNSF, the railroad. The sources point out the specific vocabulary she has to use when she talks to investors on earnings calls.
Oh, the vocabulary is telling.
She constantly has to use words like efficiency, optimizing, and maintaining a competitive cost structure. That is an exhausting vocabulary. It implies a never-ending daily battle against decay and competition just to keep your head above water.
It's the language of a company where the A and the B cost a fortune. Someone has to sweat. Someone has to aggressively optimize every single process. Someone has to run faster than the competition just to survive another year.
The mechanical model literally extracts a toll from human beings, but the free surfer, it extracts practically nothing.
Nothing at all.
The CEO of Visa doesn't have to talk about efficiency because the A is practically free to run. They don't have to talk about widening the gap with the competition because they operate in a locked-in global duopoly where 85% of the world still needs to digitize. The wave does the work, not the humans.
Now, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's absolutely vital to state that none of this analysis is a criticism of Warren and Buffett or Berkshire Hathaway.
Oh, absolutely not. You can't argue with his results.
The mechanical model worked spectacularly for him. Since he took over in 1965, he generated returns of over 4,000,000% for his shareholders.
4 million.
4,000,000%. Yeah. The wealth creation is undeniable and historic. But it required Warren Buffett. It required the greatest capital allocator in the history of capitalism making consistently excellent, highly rational decisions for six consecutive decades.
Yeah, that's not easy.
The mechanical model requires absolute genius to work at that scale. The free surfer model, it requires nothing but the wave. You don't need a genius at the helm of Visa or MSCI for the world to continue its shift toward digital payments and passive investing.
So what does this all mean? We started this journey with a witty, off-the-cuff quote from a 95-year-old billionaire about doing nothing. And from that, we've decoded a profound framework for how the world actually works.
We really have.
We've seen the A, the toll booth of today, and the B, the new lanes of tomorrow. We've uncovered the hidden, draining costs of maintaining them and why traditional financial metrics often fail to capture the magic of zero friction.
Exactly.
We've seen why the ultimate prize in business, and maybe in life, isn't building a hardworking machine, but finding a level one free surfer.
A place where the wave does all the heavy lifting.
Exactly. So here's my challenge to you listening right now. Look at your own life. Look at your own investments, your own business, or even your own career path.
It applies to everything.
Are you stuck in level three? Are you constantly fighting entropy, using that exhausting vocabulary of efficiency just to maintain an expensive A while paying heavily for your B? Or have you found a free surfer? Because if you were lucky enough to find a level one wave, the text leaves us with a brilliant, liberating realization.
You don't need to be a genius.
Right. You don't need to make thousands of grueling decisions. You only ever need to ask yourself one single question once a year. Is the wave still there? And if the answer is yes, you can sit back, smile, and as Warren Buffett would say, not do a damn thing.